Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everybody. This is Stoney Jackson.
I'm going to be with Zach and Dustin on $2 Late Fee. I want you guys to tune in and listen. It's going to be fun. Check it out.
Before there was IMDb.com, there was Zach and Dustin.
You know those guys who think they know everything about a movie without having to go on the internet to look it up? That's us, but maybe only for the years 1981 through mid-1989.
No, I'd say late 1978 through early 1992. Either way, we know movies, and even more specifically, we know soundtracks from those movies.
Yeah, this is $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
This is the podcast where we pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it still holds up today.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Thanks for listening. On to the show.
Okie dokie. Well, finishing up Streets of Fire Month in a very, very strong way here today. I, for one, could not be more excited about how this has gone. Devoting, you know, we don't always do it, devote an entire month to one movie, but when we do, in many, many ways, we get a total immersive experience. And it's fun to see kind of people come out of the woodwork and be like, oh man, I love that you guys are doing this, and people taking part. And today we got Bird, one of the Sorrells.
Stoney Jackson in the house. In person, he was just styling and profiling. I mean, he brought such great energy to our interview. It was a perfect way to kind of end this Streets of Fire month with an interview that brought some fire, great stories, and lots of fun.
We know Stoney from Streets of Fire, of course, but we talk about we cover a lot of things today. We cover Trespass, which is another Walter Hill. Fun one. We talk about The Righteous Apples for a little bit, a show that Zach, sure, you've never heard of. And I was like, how have you never heard of this? Something must be wrong.
I was blown away by the whole Righteous Apples discussion, because I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't even know about that show back in the day. There are so many shows from the 80s, movies from the 80s that just come and go and then they're gone. And
I mean, that's never stopped you before. I usually think that the more obscure it is, the more likely it is you own it. Like, this aired for 20 minutes one time on NBC, and you've got it.
We talked about The Insiders, the TV series The Insiders. He did the movie he did right before it, which, Knights of the City.
Yeah, you just showed it to me recently. I fell asleep for a little bit, not because it was boring, but just because I was very tired. And then I woke up and then I watched the end of it. It's pretty rad.
It's a nice segue into the fact that Michael Jackson and his connection to Stoney Jackson, very unique, yes, very, yes, special.
This could be breaking news. Breaking news right
breaking
here.
Breaking news. I mean, yeah. If you look at Knights of the City, by the way, you see heavy influences from the Beat It music video.
Oh, you know what? Breaking news. We have a new patron that we need to thank. Sandro Diaz, dude, thank you so much. Top tier patron, of our what's called our good guy / good girl tier, and you get so much good stuff. And you know, we really appreciate all the support. And if you would like to join our Patreon, it's very easy to do that. We have a lot of cool things. I won't get into all of it, but thank you. And I also just want to say, if you guys are able to leave us a review, Spotify, iTunes, rate and review us, that is would be so immensely appreciated.
It goes a long way, just writing some nice things about our show. It really does. And if you sign up at that highest tier, well, Mr. Diaz, you will be getting a beautiful mix CD curated by Dustin and myself to enjoy, the first of many.
And we're assuming that you still have something to play CDs on, because if you don't, you know, you're probably listening to the wrong show.
If you don't have a Walkman, well, you need to fix that too, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah. If you don't have a walk, well, right. Cause the cassette, I mean, we're not offering cassettes, but if we probably would.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Down the pipe. Once we become bigger and better.
Right. That's so, so cost effective.
Yes. But what a way to finish out Streets of Fire, the month it was released, way back when. This interview will bring the fire once again. He was a great guest, and it was a pleasure to have him on the show.
Yeah, he's got that joy in him, which I appreciate. You have it too. You and Stoney. I have it some days. You know, most days.
You got it.
Most days. It's in there. It's
Don't
an eight.
Be modest.
It's an eight. Bring the fire, Streets of Fire, Stoney Jackson.
Stoney Jackson.
Yes.
Thank you for being on $2 Late Fee.
Hey, thank you guys for inviting me down here, man. This is really cool.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you on the show.
It's awesome to have you.
You guys are giving me chills. Too many compliments.
You look, as we say, you know, you walked in here. I'm like, what are you, like 38 now? And you're like, I'm not. And you look amazing.
Thank you.
You look amazing. So wow. Whatever you're doing, share it with us.
Well, I don't know. I just go to sleep and wake up.
How many hours a night do you get? Sleep,
yeah, man, it depends. Sometimes I rarely get any.
What?
Yeah.
So sometimes. You're one of the, like, you function on 2 hours?
Yeah, I can function on 2 hours, but it's bad.
Okay.
But so I can't function.
How many did you get last night?
I probably got about 5 to 6.
Five to six.
Well, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Sounds about right. I get that same amount.
Anytime I go to sleep really early, if I go to bed early, let's say 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
I always wake up about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and then I'm up till like 6 or 7.
To the
day, that's when I hit it.
Wait, 6 or 7 a.m.
Yeah, and then so I fall back asleep.
Okay, wow. And are you productive in those hours?
No.
Okay, so it's more like whatever.
I'm just laying there, man.
Okay,
yeah.
Have you always been that way?
No.
Okay, so that was something fairly recent, or
sort of in the past few years, actually.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're obviously a little bit younger than you, and we look a lot older than you. But
no, we don't.
But you've
I feel older as we're talking.
Well, you had said, and we can get to that later, but you said you took a break from acting for a while.
Yeah.
But your career goes a little bit back.
Yeah, it does, man. I started when I was a teenager.
Wow.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, one of the first parts that I ever had was a guest star role on a TV series called The Righteous Apples.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know anything about, he was a pretty big producer for a while. His name was Topper Carew.
Okay.
And Michael T. Williamson, who starred in Streets of Fire with me, right? He was a regular on the show.
Okay.
And that's how I met him. So he was a teenager. I was a teenager. And that was like my first, like, kind of main guest star kind of role on the show.
Yeah, it's called Righteous.
The Righteous Apples.
The Righteous Apples?
Yeah.
What was it about?
It was kind of like what's that show? The Saved by the Bell?
Yeah.
It was like a Saved by the Bell kind of show, but before Saved by the Bell.
Okay.
E.G. Daily, you know, she was on the show. Yep, she was a regular on the show. Michael T. Williamson. I can't remember who the other cast people were, but
those are three heavy hitters right there.
You said you didn't know it.
No.
You not know it?
No, I don't.
Oh, this is significant. If Zach doesn't know it and Zach doesn't own it, that means it's
out. A pretty big deal because I know my stuff.
It's a huge deal.
You know, I thought he was jiving me. I couldn't believe that even you'd use a brother. He ain't no brother. Now, I was doing Uncle Tommy here a favor, making it harder for the cause.
What the hell cause are you fighting?
Man, I'm ticked off at the way they treating us at Sherwin. Until I can get us back to our old school, man, I'm not gonna let it rest. And you got to come down, brother.
Get Michael T to try to come in here and do this.
Man. Yeah, come on now.
He's on the road a lot.
Well, we want to do a Sorrel reunion.
We got to get all the Sorrels in. We want to do all the songs.
You know, it'd be easy to get me, Grand, and Michael T, but I don't know, Robert, and he's, yeah, I don't know. He might be a little difficult.
Does he not like fun, you think?
I don't know what it is. Right. Honest with you, I don't know. I'm just saying it might be a little difficult, but he may do it.
No, but it's true. You guys, you've all had significantly different careers since, and Robert was very, very focused on comedy for a while. And
yeah, he was focused on directing more so the comedy.
Yeah.
He was filming, what was that movie he did? Hollywood Shuffle,
yeah.
He was doing that on the weekends while we were shooting Streets of Fire.
No kidding.
And when we were doing Streets of Fire, we were contracted for 22 or 23 weeks. Right, which is a long time.
That's a long time.
Yeah, that's like a half, that's like 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay, but we didn't film the entire time. Mm-hmm. What Universal wanted to do was they wanted to make sure that no actors in between the times that they were going to be down were going to go and get other parts. Mm. So they took care of us. 22 weeks, man. That was sweet.
They don't do that anymore now, do they?
I don't know. Yeah. Probably not. But yeah, 22 weeks on a movie, on a feature, Universal.
That's wild.
That was big.
Yeah.
And they took care of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
we did well.
You are now, you're back on television, right? And a TV series. You did a TV series fairly recently.
Right.
But you got your start on TV as well.
Yeah.
And sitcoms, episodic television.
Started out doing commercials.
Yeah, okay.
I did a lot of commercials.
Were you always did you always want to be an actor when you were a kid or?
Yes. Since I was when I was growing up, I grew up in rural Virginia. And for the first, I would say up until fourth grade, mm-hmm. I lived with my grandparents.
Okay.
And my mom, when I was first born, my mom got married because she was pregnant, and it was one of those pregnancies back in the days where you had to get married to the guy that got you pregnant because it was
not like it is today. Yeah, right.
So my parents, my biologicals, weren't really that in love with each other. My mom was always in love with a childhood sweetheart who his mother and her mother were best friends since they were kids.
Oh, wow.
That's how rural that part of Virginia is. So everybody like knew each other. So my mom was always in love with him. And then I guess they had a period where they weren't together, and then she messed around with, you know, my biological father and ended up getting pregnant when she was 17 years old.
Yep.
So she had me. And then we first lived in Maryland with him for about 2 years, Maryland and D.C. And then they got divorced, and then my mother and I moved back into the house with my grandparents in Virginia in a little town called Dinwiddie, which is outside of Petersburg in Richmond, where I was born in Richmond. So,
back in the day.
Yeah. So then my mom ended up marrying the guy, right?
The original guy.
Yeah.
The original sweetheart.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice.
And they have two daughters, which are my two half-sisters. And then he wanted to go to med school. Now, his father was very well to do, especially being back in that time, his family had money. So they were able to have cars, televisions, and all that stuff back in the early 60s and the late 50s, you know, when my parents grew up.
Yeah.
And he had money, but his father was very stingy. And my dad always wanted to be a doctor. So he actually put himself through med school at University of Virginia.
Wow.
And amazing. So right before he did that, he was going to school in Portsmouth, Virginia. And when they moved there, I didn't want to go. So I stayed with my grandparents. So my mom, two of my young sisters, and my stepdad moved to Portsmouth, and they lived there. And I stayed with my grandparents. And that brings me back to say this. When I was there, I remember when I was about 6 or 7 years old, my grandparents bought me a TV, a little tiny white box, black and white TV. And remember, TV used to go off at like 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night, and you get that boop. And every night, I would listen to Ray Charles do that. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, beautiful. Oh, man, that was my favorite song in the world. So I would listen to that every night.
Louis Armstrong
at six, seven years old, midnight. watching TV until it turned off, and then I would go to sleep. They wouldn't even know it because I would be in the room.
Right, I had my just own little sneaking. Bedroom. Yeah, 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 yeah.
So because of watching so much TV, I used to watch Lassie and Gentle Ben and all that stuff. Always wanted to be an actor from that moment.
Love that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I always knew when I would watch them, you know, Opie and what do you call it? My Three Sons, okay. All those shows when yeah. I was a little kid.
Andy Griffith and all that.
Yeah, all that stuff, man. I always knew I could do what those guys are doing.
Wow.
But I never knew the business was the way it is.
You never do. You never do until you're in it. You're like, oh, this is the business.
That's the reoccurring theme we have on our show a lot of times is when people come on, they say, you know, I really wanted to be an actor, really wanted to be a performer. But then the business side of it was the not unfun side, you know. But mm-hmm. but you, did you come out to L.A. as a teenager?
So this is what happened. When my dad went to med school, then I decided to go ahead and move back in with them because we got, we moved to Charlottesville.
Okay.
And at that time, the Navy had a program where they would pay for anyone's education that was like med students.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They would pay for their education as long as you gave them, when you graduated, at least 8 years serving.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Okay. So, 8 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
So my dad graduated from med school, and he did his internship and his residency at, the internship was done at Bethesda, Maryland. So we moved to Bethesda.
Okay.
And so when he became a naval officer, that's what they did. They made him an officer.
Wow.
So things like went.
For sure.
Yeah, because yeah, totally. we were really poor at first. And then when that happened, got into the Navy and as an officer, he didn't have to go in and enlisted or anything like that. He went in as an officer.
He went in as an officer.
Yeah.
And he could be stationed where he wanted?
Well, what happened was he did his 4 years in internship. And then when he did his residency, we moved to Pensacola, Florida, to the Naval Air Station down
okay.
there. And then after he was done there, we had a choice to go to either Rota, Spain, the Philippines, or Long Beach. I always wanted to be an actor.
Yeah. There's the
so
choice.
When I heard Long Beach, yeah. I'm like, man, that's right yeah. next to LA.
LBC.
Never been to California ever before.
Yeah.
And I talked them into moving to Long Beach.
Wow.
When I was a kid, when I was like yeah. about
oh
probably
my
13, 14
God.
Years old.
They must have loved you so much.
Yeah, we moved to Long Beach. And that's where we've been ever since.
Wow.
That's how I got
that's
out
amazing.
Here.
We can go to Spain. How, we yeah. go to the Philippines. You're like, no.
Yeah. And then I didn't know anything about how to get into the business.
Of course
so
not.
I yeah. was looking in newspapers all the time, yeah. looking yeah. for, you know, acting, just whatever I could
yeah.
find.
Yeah.
And I found this place called Caroline Leonetti LTD. It was like a kind of like an acting class.
Okay.
And as well as they taught you how to take care of yourself and all this kind of stuff. And they showed you how to go about, you know, getting an agent when you graduated out of that class,
uh-huh.
which I think was probably 2 or 3 months long.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got my pictures. That's how I found how to get an agent.
Class out of Long
yeah.
Beach?
Yeah. No, it was in Hollywood.
In
it
Hollywood.
Was in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Okay.
And at that particular time, we were living in Cerritos.
Okay.
So my family bought a house in Cerritos, California. And which is not really that far from LA.
Yeah.
And back then, the traffic wasn't like it is
right,
now.
Right, right.
If you try to go from Cerritos now, it'd take you 2 hours.
Yeah. People don't get that. People
but back
don't
then, I could get to LA. I could get to
yeah.
Hollywood in about 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, my
sounds
God.
About right.
In traffic.
Yeah. You could do that now about 3 yeah. in the morning, I think. Maybe.
Man, LA is like Manila, Philippines. I was there a couple of years ago, and oh, my God. I swear to you, this is no joke. If you want to get in a car, get in a cab or whatever,
yeah.
to go 4 miles into mm. that city, it will take you over 2 hours to do it.
Oh, it's brutal.
But isn't that yeah. dependent on certain times of day?
No.
There's no logic? Same here? Because I feel like it's all the time here now.
And you know where else is bad is Ho Chi Minh City?
Oof.
I mean,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's crazy over there.
Yeah, we were talking offline right when we first kind of made our introductions to each other, and you were saying you travel a lot. You still travel to this day a lot?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Places all over the world.
Yeah.
Any particular place that you fancy more than another?
No, not well. I don't know. Not really. Italy's really beautiful.
I've never been.
Italy's really
got to go to the motherland.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Right. My 10% motherland.
Yeah.
I guess, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, here you are, like getting into acting as a young child, teenager,
mm-hmm.
really,
And during an era when, like, we're talking, it was way different than it is now, mm-hmm. obviously. So you get your headshots, you find out where to go, mm-hmm. you just start auditioning, start hustling?
I got a commercial agent first.
Okay.
And that wasn't by design. I just saw this agency. I submitted pictures to these agencies, yeah. and yeah. then I got calls to come in and see them. And so I went into this agency at the time. They were sort of new. Mm-hmm. They were called Sutton, Barth, and Venari.
Okay.
Now SBV. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're like the biggest agency now yeah. with commercials, especially commercials. And so
we do voiceover. SBV is
yeah,
top.
They're yeah. huge.
Yeah.
But I got with them when they were like just starting yep. out.
That's wild. That's
yeah. awesome. So they picked me up and they started sending me out on my first audition, which was, I think, a McDonald's French fries commercial.
Nice.
And I was the lead in that commercial. I
Your got first
my,
audition.
I got my you first booked. Audition. Yep. McDonald's.
Yeah. Bless you. That's awesome. That's awesome.
I'm loving yeah. it.
And sorry. Then from there, like every week, I was booking a commercial. And all of them were national. All of them. And check this out. Remember Roots?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody and their mama was watching Roots.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. You guys may be too young for it.
I was watching Roots. I mean... Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it really, no, but
I was raised in front
very
of the TV.
Familiar.
Roots was huge.
It was yeah. huge.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm in like yeah. freshman in high school and or sophomore, and that commercial aired.
Prime time.
Had no idea it was coming on. We're all watching Roots. Next thing we know, I'm like, oh. And my yeah. McDonald's commercial aired. When I went to school That's the next awesome. Day, everybody was like, hey man, we saw you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's like, get off me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because nobody awesome. Wanted to talk to me at first, you know.
I right.
Like, yeah.
That's how it happens.
Right.
Yeah. Me and my sister at that time, we were like probably out of that school, maybe 7 black kids in that entire school.
Wow.
Yeah.
In Long Beach.
It was in or Cerritos.
Cerritos. In Cerritos. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Times have changed.
Really?
I know.
A little bit. A little bit.
Amazing.
Well, and then you were saying earlier, The Righteous Apples was a show you were on for a couple episodes, but then you, from there, you went to The White Shadow.
Yeah. The first part that I ever actually got theatrically was I did an episode. It was a 2-hour episode of Quincy with yeah. Jack Klugman.
Yeah.
And Michael Constantine.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Remember him? I think he was on, what, Room 222?
Yep.
And that was, I had a few scenes with those two guys.
Okay.
And I was a young kid who had overdosed on some drugs or pills or something like mm-hmm. that. Whatever the cosmetic or drug was, you know, in those days.
Yeah.
So that was my first part.
Wow.
And then, yeah, I ended up getting that Righteous Apples, which I was like the main guest star lead on that TV series. That was with Michael T. Williamson.
Yeah.
Which is still my best friend to this day.
Oh, nice. Right on.
Yeah, he and I have been best friends since that day that we met.
That's Righteous Apples.
Yep.
That's beautiful.
That is
he
so
said,
cool.
He said, man, I just saw something in you. Mm. That's what he said to me.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And we've been this close. He was my best man in my wedding. Yeah, we've been that close. And we still are to this minute.
That's, oh,
I love
that's
that.
Amazing.
Yeah. E.G. Daily is another one who was in that
right.
show.
Also in Streets of Fire.
Yeah.
Which is like amazing. So yes. Is there a connection as far as you guys, were you randomly auditioning for the same things? Did you, like with you and Michael T, like the fact that you guys both ended up as Sorrells, but were already best friends. Did one of you bring the other in, or was it just?
At that particular time, back in those days, you couldn't bring each other into anything.
Yeah.
We were mm-hmm. just all auditioning for whatever we could audition for. Okay. And we were all out there. A lot of times, yeah, we did audition for a lot of the same parts.
Yeah.
Some I got, some he got.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, other actors out there got stuff too. But I worked a lot, and so did he.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I love that. I love that you guys had that relationship and still do to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it shows on screen. Like, you know, when there's a relationship with people, it comes, and you have to be friends or something in a movie or TV series, it comes across so much more. Like, you want to connect more with those people as a viewer. Because you're like, those guys are cool. They're having a good time. And there was something about your performance, especially in Streets of Fire, where we were just drawn into that. I'm like, I want to know more about your backstory. I want to see a Sorrells movie, you know?
We had always talked about that. I just don't know what happened. I think it was something that was probably thought about by the studio and Walter Hill,
mm-hmm.
Doing a Sorrells movie, because we did get pretty popular from that movie.
Yeah, for sure.
And that song.
Yeah.
Well, then Robert Townsend made a movie called The Five Heartbeats. And like in my own mind back in the day, role playing or whatever, I'm like, oh, I'll just call that band the Sorrells.
Yeah.
That'll be their story.
That's pretty much why he did it too, I think.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Right on. I mean, like we were talking about this the other day when I Can Dream About You comes on and you're singing it, your character is. I know Dan Hartman is a legend in his own way. Rest in peace. Yeah. I always associated that voice with you in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Everybody.
It was hard to detach the two.
Yeah.
When you got cast for that, did you know that this movie was going to be as big as it was? I mean, a cult hit, I guess.
It became more of a cult hit than it did a box office hit.
Right. Didn't open great.
Yeah. Yeah. I think at the time that it opened against Superman, I think.
Yeah.
And then also what happened was there was a huge freeze over on the eastern seaboard.
Yes.
In the country. It was like one of the worst that had ever happened. So that really affected the opening of that movie.
The opening weekend was not well attended.
That's what happened.
For
and
sure.
If you don't get, if a movie doesn't open well, people don't usually go 2 or 3 weeks after it's already opened up.
Yep.
Right. That's how they used to do it anyway. It was all opening weekend.
Yeah.
Like all the time.
That's what happened to that movie. That's exactly what happened to that movie, why it got crushed.
Well, dare I say, I think it's actually gotten more popular now.
Like, yeah, I think so.
You bring up Streets of Fire now, and we are clearly, because we're having you on the show and talking about the movie, and we have Michael Perret on, and Streets of Fire came out the month we're recording this in June. It holds up, and then some.
Mm-hmm.
And Dustin and I were saying in our previous episode of the Streets of Fire, when we focused just on the movie, the Sorrells are really like the heart of that movie in many ways. Like, you guys are the most wholesome of the film. There's a lot of gray characters throughout, but you guys are just pure heart.
I said the most likable, basically.
<That's> Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't, you know, just pulling any punches about it, because it's like the second you guys are on the screen, you're like, oh, finally, some people we can like relate to and we can like, and
really?
We can, everyone, every other character, just like, you know, even like Tom Cody, like he's the cool, tough guy, he's the hero, but he's also like knocking Diane Lane out.
Hit her in
he
the
just,
face.
He just punches her in the face. And you're like, and he's like rude.
Could
you
do that today?
No, right?
Everybody's
That's what I said.
Everybody's rude, you know. Rick Moranis is just insufferable. Like Billy Fish, the character.
He's a jerk.
You know, so
yeah,
every character
was a jerk.
Yeah, every character is basically, you know, just there is no, there's no middle ground to them. It's just kind of like.
Nobody's really nice.
Nobody's nice.
Except for you guys.
Except for us.
Yep.
Except for you guys.
And we got kidnapped.
I know, right?
Yes.
Against your will.
Yes, and you're nice throughout the whole thing.
And by the end, we're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's do our moves and whatnot.
It's amazing. So Michael came on and he told the story about how when in the scene when he's hijacking your bus and you were driving that bus and you were literally driving that bus as an actor.
Yeah.
And he talked about, you know, having to jump out in front and basically stop the bus and having some concerns about it. He was like, well, that's Stoney. Stoney's not a driver, you know. And Walter was saying, you know, oh, no, he's good. And I would love to hear your perspective of that.
I don't know. I kind of remember it. I think I was a little nervous that I, you know, wouldn't put on the brakes hard enough. And bus brakes aren't like, you know, regular car brakes.
Right.
No.
Right. Yeah. It's not like brakes.
It was a little nerve-wracking. I didn't want to hit that guy.
You need a special license driving a bus.
He got over there. Yeah. You can see.
Yes.
Yeah.
He said it was perfect. It was as if, you know, you broke and he stopped. It was like he stopped the bus.
Yeah. I always make sure I try to do it right as much as I can. So yeah, I didn't want to.
Especially in that moment.
Oh yeah. Oh man. And he was off of Eddie and the Cruiser, so he was like really big, the studio. Yeah. You know, this was supposed to be a trilogy.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 And it would have been nice. Again,
That would have been cool.
The Sorrells would have been episode 2.
I know we would have been in it.
You know you would have crushed that stuff.
Yeah. That world.
Walter loved us.
I'm just saying it would make a great TV series now. Everything's going to TV now, but who knows? Everyone listening to this potentially, you know, down the road.
I never thought I would see Star Wars become the TV series stuff that it's become now. Obi-Wan Kenobi just came out. I've never thought that would happen.
Well, finally, our generation is making the content that everyone's seeing now, right? And I think, you know, the 80s were such a nostalgic time for us that what came out of the 80s, the children of that era are now making the stuff that they loved, mm-hmm. right? So the neon and the bright colors and the fashion and just the music, everything's hitting and it's now coming back into fashion. So science fiction like Star Wars or whatever, that's coming back into the fold. I love that. I love that something like Stranger Things is spotlighting a artist like Kate Bush and mm-hmm. like young people are like, who's this Kate Bush person? You know, and they go, oh, whoa, blowing my mind.
Yeah.
So hopefully with Streets of Fire, you know, the Sorrells, like that gets more into fashion. I Can Dream About You is such a great song. It's mm-hmm. such a beautiful song.
Let me give you a little backstory on that song.
I Can Dream About You? Yeah. Please do.
Okay. Dan Hartman obviously wrote that song.
Yeah.
I'm sure he didn't mind doing it, but I think at first they wanted to see if we could actually do the song.
Okay.
And then what ended up happening is the song was so good and on that soundtrack was phenomenal.
Yep. Yeah.
That entire soundtrack was phenomenal.
Yep.
And so Jimmy Iovine mm-hmm. was the guy behind it. You know how
legendary big, producer
Jimmy Iovine.
Yep.
And back then, you know, he wasn't the Jimmy Iovine that he is now.
Yeah.
But he was still a pretty powerful guy. Mm-hmm. And so he was in charge of that soundtrack. And so per discussion that I had with Walter Hill, because he told me, he goes, the studio and the record label have decided that the song would be a bigger hit if a white performer performed it, as mm. opposed to a black sort of doo-wop group.
Mm.
So it made sense. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, that's unfortunately the way it is.
But
I mean, that's what their thinking was, and that's what happened. So Dan Hartman went on and did the song and put the record out under him.
I wonder if this was the 90s when Boyz II Men came out and kind of that hip hop R&B, you know.
A lot of that stuff happened or got brought back, if you will, because of us.
Yeah.
Rick James, who was a really close friend of mine, he had come out to L.A. So every time he come out to L.A., it was me and you know, a few other people. We'd always go hang out with Rick, go to the clubs and yep. stuff. Just so you know, I never did drugs, ever.
You heard that.
They would always talk me, try to talk me into it.
Good for you, man.
Yeah. Because, come on, Stoney Jackson.
Your name is Stoney. You're too sober.
He would always call me Stoney Jackson. He rarely would call me Stoney. Sometimes if he's like, Stoney, he would, you know, yell at me or something to come over. But always call me Stoney Jackson.
Stoney Jackson never got stoned.
But Rick had started a group. He told me, he says, man, I loved you in that movie. I love what you did. I love that group. He wanted to do a doo-wop group.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
he started a doo-wop group. He went back to Buffalo, put together these guys and called them Process and the Do-Rags. Look it up.
Process and the Do-Rags. Okay.
Process and the Do-Rags. They did their song did okay, but obviously you didn't know much about it, so it didn't do that great. But yeah, he did that based off of Streets of Fire.
Wow.
Completely. He told me he was gonna do it and he did it. And then when I saw him again, I got mad at him. I said, why didn't you put me in the group?
Right. Come on.
Yeah,
I was mad with him.
Are you a singer? Like have you
I can sing. I'm not a great singer, but okay. I can sing. I can hold it a little bit. I used to do the singing on The White Shadow.
Yeah, yeah.
The shower songs and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I was the lead singer there when I got on that show.
Nice. Yeah, there's always something, an energy about you that had this performer, on stage performer energy, mm-hmm. always about you.
Yeah.
Everything. Like you radiated off the screen, you know? So I'm like, something more than just acting. It was like the music side too, so.
No, it's funny you say that because when I got the Insiders, you know, I had the big giant Jerry curl. You see the picture right there.
Got the picture,
And the earrings dangling everywhere. And I used to get compared to Prince a lot.
Totally.
And definitely so when I got the Insiders with Nicholas Focus. Campbell.
Yep.
That's funny. So we were getting called in all the papers and stuff and all the press, Bowie and Prince and Bowie.
Totally.
Yeah.
I love that show. I wish it had, I think because there was so much music in it, a la Miami Vice, mm-hmm. you know, maybe the licensing is what keeps it from not being on DVD now or whatever. It only lasted for, you know, 13 episodes or so.
It's 16.
Okay. Yeah. But it's a great show. Great premise.
That was one of the funnest projects I've ever worked on.
Really?
It was great.
So take us through that. Like, how'd that come about?
They did Universal did a pilot called Dark Horse, and it was mainly just Nicholas Campbell in it. He had somewhat of a sidekick. There was an actor named Randy Brooks,
okay,
who was kind of his sidekick, but he wasn't like an equal partner in the show. So they did that pilot, mm-hmm. and then they didn't pick it up. So they came back and relooked at it, and they said, we want to do this. This was when Miami Vice hit that first season.
Yeah.
So you had Philip Michael Thomas mm-hmm. and Don Johnson as like the two partners.
Yep.
So Universal also produced Miami Vice, but it was for NBC.
Yeah, this is for ABC.
So Universal said, you know what? ABC came to them and said, hey, we want to redo this show because they wanted to. Everybody jumps on. If a show is successful, other networks come on and basically copycat it. Totally. So ours was sort of like that too. So ABC said, we want to make it a team. We want to make them a partnership like Miami Vice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I came in and started auditioning. Nicholas Campbell and I had just filmed a movie with Leon Isaac Kennedy down in Miami in Fort Lauderdale. What was the name? Oh, it's called Knights of the City.
Yep.
So we were down there for like a few months. Great movie. And that's where I got to know Nicholas Campbell. And
very cool premise, by the way.
Yeah.
Knights of the City.
Nights, you saw that?
Yeah. Oh, back in the day. I think they showed it at the New Beverly Cinema.
Oh, really?
Yeah, way back when.
Oh, wow.
Because they do like a grindhouse night. And Leon Isaac Kennedy, I believe he was there maybe for Penitentiary, because I know he did that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But Leon Isaac Kennedy, who was just a New York ninja, you know, anyways, they showed that. And I was just like, the movie changed my life.
Leon,
it's great.
Leon,
changed man. Life. Well, no, change, like blew my mind is what I did. Didn't change my life, but it blew my mind.
How did you change it? What direction did
because I became a rapper. Now I'm kidding.
Leon was also a good friend of mine because you get to meet a lot of actors when you're auditioning and stuff. And you're in that circle, you like meet everybody. And Leon and I were pretty good friends. And he and my agent at that time were really good friends. And he was going to do this movie, Knights of the City. And he went to my agent to try to help him cast the movie.
Okay.
So one day I was going, I always used to go hang out with my agent back then. And he was off of Sunset Boulevard. So he used to always go over there almost every day, just hang out in there and stuff, see girls, all kinds of
nice.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So I ran into Leon. I was like, what's up, man? What are you doing up here? And I didn't know. He was putting together this movie and David was like kind of helping him. And he goes, I want you in the movie. There was no part written for me at all. Nothing.
Whoa.
So he goes, don't even worry about that, Stone. Just, we're going to come. We're going to do a deal. We're going to put you in the movie. Get there. And basically, any line and every line that I had in the movie with all the scenes, I would just ad-lib, throw in stuff. And
that
was how I ended up being in that movie.
That's great.
And was down there in Miami for 3 months, man. Wow. And you can imagine how awesome that was.
3 months of just ad-libbing into scenes. Man. Yeah.
In the 80s.
Wow.
Girls everywhere, man. It was nuts. That was so cool.
Miami's still like in the 80s. You go down there now, you're like, yeah.
You got it.
I was just there.
Watch it.
I was just there.
So, okay.
Yeah, I was going to go back to, is that what you?
Well, yeah, getting back to The Insider as well. Because so you do this movie, Knights of the City.
So that's where I knew Nicholas.
Yeah.
And so.
You're Bowie.
We're done. Finished filming. We come back to Los Angeles. I get a call from my agent. Hey, you got an audition to go, producer session for this new pilot that they're doing. And I go, okay. So I get the material and it's like these two big, huge scenes with like a lot of dialogue in it, right? Between me and the lead character.
Yeah.
And I had no idea it was Nicholas.
Oh.
So I go to Universal and you know that they call it the Black Tower.
Yep.
So I go to the tower and I'm sitting out there waiting to go in. And then Leonard Hill was our executive producer of the Insiders. And there's probably maybe like four or five other people in there. When I walk in the room, Nicholas is sitting in a chair, right?
Okay.
And so I go in, I look, and he sees me. So we're both kind of shocked. Now, he may have known Stoney Jackson was next on the list. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
But when, yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, he did know that I was coming through the door.
Okay.
So when I walk through the door, he's looking at me, I'm looking at him, and just totally ignore everybody. He jumps up out the chair, I run over there, and we just grab each other, just hugging.
That's awesome. Like, that's awesome.
And so we get through all that little bit, everybody's in there laughing and stuff. So then they, Linda Hill proceeds to start telling me what's going on with this show. So that must have taken like 10 minutes. I was in there for a long time before I even started reading.
Wow.
So then they say, you okay, you guys ready? I go, okay. So I got my sides in my hand and stuff. I decide, you know what? Back then, people weren't off script or off book.
You weren't right for auditions. You weren't expected
to
be off
people
book.
Were, yeah. Not like it is today.
Yeah.
You go in there now looking at your pages, you may as well leave because they don't want to.
Right.
They don't
it's
hear.
All self-tapes now anyway.
Yeah. Oh, it's awful. So, so he and I started reading. I still had the papers in my hand, but I didn't have them. And there was just this natural chemistry between he and I, this banter was going on in this scene. And so when it was finished, I mean, it was just like this weird vibe in the room. I just had this weird vibe in my heart that, damn, I'm going to get this.
Yeah, you felt it. Yeah,
I just felt it. And so everybody's like, man, that was great. That was great. I swear, I don't even know. But that day, I got a call back. They want to see you again. They want to see you again.
Nice.
I go, okay. Then I went back, met with them again, read again, go back home, get another call. They want to put you on tape. They actually want to set up. Doing these kind of screen tests, they don't do anymore.
Right. Yeah.
These were like back in the 40s, 50s screen test kind of thing. They said they want to actually film you and Nicholas as if you were actually shooting the show.
Awesome.
I'm still auditioning.
Yeah. This is awesome. Yeah.
And they paid me for it because it was like a day of work. So went in. And we shot these scenes with he and I. And so I remember I had to go back again and audition for the network. I had to do that about three or four times with the network. I'm like, oh, my God, just give me the part already. And at this particular point, you know, you're just tired of auditioning.
Yeah. Right.
And you're thinking, you start thinking too much. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you don't come off as well.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I got through it and I ended up getting it. Here's a kicker. I had auditioned for Stir Crazy.
Okay.
Remember that Richard Pryor movie?
Yeah, Gene Wilder and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
They were going to do a series about Stir Crazy.
Oh.
I auditioned for that pilot. That was also, I think, Universal.
Okay.
Okay? And I think it was CBS. I'm not sure. But Larry Riley, he's dead now. But do you remember who he is?
Not off the top of my
head. Yeah, look him up. Okay. He did a lot of work. His name was Larry Riley. I don't remember why he passed away or how, but yeah, he's dead now. But he was playing, was it him and me? I don't know. I know that I got that pilot, and then Universal came to us, ABC came to us, and they said, we want Stoney for Insiders. Next thing you know, money starts going up.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Bidding war.
Prime time. TV
and it was
series.
Nothing planned. I just happened to get both at the same time.
Nice.
So I ended up doing Insider Pilot. That series did get picked up, but I think it only lasted like 3 or 4 weeks on the air.
And it's a shame because it's a really good, it's a really fun show. You know,
what's that?
The Insiders.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about Stir Crazy did get picked up,
Stir
but
Crazy
it only lasted
did.
For about four episodes.
Okay.
Ours was on for the whole first part of the season.
Yeah. Like you said, 16 episodes.
And this is what happened, I think, with the show from what I heard from Leonard Goldberg, who was our, Leonard Hill, who was our executive producer.
Mm-hmm.
ABC was going through a transition. They got bought out.
Mm.
So the guy who was the president of ABC, Insiders, was like his baby.
Okay.
Oh, he was the president. What was his name? Lou Ehrlich? And our show was like, out of all the shows for ABC, that was his baby. Mm-hmm. He loved Insiders for some reason. And so when that transition happened and I think Cap Cities took over ABC,
okay,
somebody took over. And when that happened, they got rid of him.
Bye-bye, babies.
So yeah. Our show, yeah. I don't want to say it got put on a back burner because they gave us like the best time slot you could have.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was opening up Fall Guy and Hotel.
I mean, come on.
I mean, no, actually, we took over Fall Guy. Lee Majors wasn't happy about that because we took his time slot. So we opened up for, what was the show that came on after that? It was, I know Hotel was like the, Hotel and Dynasty.
Zach, you were watching.
Dynasty.
You were
Hotel
watching
and
night.
Dynasty.
What was Dynasty, yeah.
It was us, Hotel and Dynasty. That was like the big night for television of all the networks.
Yeah, this is back in the day when literally you just had those network TV shows and that was it.
That was it.
You know, wasn't.
And we opened, we moved Fall Guy. Yeah, Lee Majors.
Well, it was, and the premise was different from Miami Vice, where it was, you know, reporter, ex-con, and you guys are linking up, taking on, you know, different aspects. It wasn't Miami Vice. It might have had a little bit of that template, and the music though kicked ass. And the opening theme, the Genesis song, you know, is such
Phil Collins.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh, it's so good. Such a great way to start.
Bang,
that.
Bang, bang.
Yeah.
Bang, bang. Down they go. It's just a job you do.
Yeah.
So good. Anyways, I know that it was after Streets of Fire. I want to backtrack a little bit going back to Streets of Fire because you were saying before we started rolling that shoot was a long shoot.
Yeah.
Like you were contracted for what, 23 weeks, you said? But you didn't shoot that whole time.
No, we didn't.
And it was cold as hell when you were doing location shots in Chicago.
Yeah, we went to Chicago because they wanted the authenticity of the L trains.
Yeah.
And, but you know, remember the look of that movie?
Yes.
It was like a futuristic, but it was like
50s, 80s.
Dated.
50s, 80s, and then other little pockets of like the 20s with Cody's look, you know?
It had that old look, but it was like kind of set in the future. Dark, that was really cool.
And Walter Hill has such a distinct vision with his movies, you know, where like The Warriors, for example, he loves the trains, you know, the train going to Coney Island and whatnot. So, yeah, that Streets of Fire had a distinctive comic book look to it. And then that's why being on set was perfect because the way it looked. But then obviously he's doing shots in Chicago with the train, right?
So we did that. I think we were in Chicago for like maybe 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks.
That's a long time too.
Man, dude, Walter Hill shoots like a page a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. Right, which you can't really do now anymore.
Oh, man, no. But now you got to shoot like 7 to 10, maybe even more pages.
Right.
But no wonder they're concerned about going over budget, you know, at a certain, because at a certain point he's like, nope, we're just going to.
Hey, that budget was huge and it was Walter Hill. So, he took his time.
He was on fire at that time, no pun intended, you know,
he
because
was.
His movies had, at that point in the 80s, he was just cranking out one hit. Well, whether it was a box office hit or not was a different story, but his uniqueness, every one of his movies, whether you like them or not, are very different from one another. You can't say, oh, that's, you know, 48 Hours is just like blah, blah, blah. No, he broke the mold with 48 Hours, that buddy comedy thing, you know? Streets of Fire is a rock and roll action musical. Like, you put all those together and people go, wait, I don't... Okay, who's in it? You know, like this, you don't see movies like this. You don't, there's never been another movie like this.
No,
in my opinion.
Almost that entire cast became like huge.
Then it's one of the best casts, top to bottom. Like every single person in that movie brings their A game.
Yeah.
You know, down to Bill Paxton, small little role, but he nailed it.
Bill Paxton, Lee Ving. That was Willem Dafoe's first movie.
Yep. He did done a movie called The Loveless, I think either before or right after that. But yeah, he like carved out that niche, you know? Yep. And Lee Ving being a total badass.
Amy Madigan, Rick Moranis.
Right?
Yeah. E.G. Daly, Diane Lane. She was already like a star.
Yeah. Right. She was a kid though.
Yeah.
And then here you are doing these. I was a musician for a while. I don't really do it anymore, but being on stage was such a rush. I love being in front of an audience and seeing you guys performing in that movie. Even if it's acting, it just felt so authentically genuine, you know, with the crowd. You filmed it at the Wiltern, right?
Yeah, we did.
So Was that a challenging process to do that scene?
No, it wasn't challenging. It was fun.
Yes.
It was a lot of fun. And yeah. They had a ton of extras.
Yeah, he shot, like, it feels authentic.
It really, as we were shooting it, it felt like a real concert.
Yeah, I bet.
It felt like a concert. The music was blaring, and when we went on stage, and it was crazy because it was like when we weren't a real group.
Yeah.
But it felt like we were a real group when we went out there, and everybody was waiting for us to come out to perform this song.
Yeah.
Hundreds of extras. Yeah. Who hires hundreds of extras? You just don't do that. Right. Yeah.
Now it's digitized and
There was hundreds of extras. And everybody was out there just waiting for us to come out and perform this song.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah. It was weird, man. The vibe, the feeling.
The style.
We've said really that, the last 7 minutes of Streets of Fire is just like the best. It's just the best on film because it's, you know, it's not only are you guys on stage, but, you know, Tom and Ellen Aim or Michael and Diane are having that moment, right, where he's like leaving her and then she goes out and tonight is what means to be young. And it's just like, it's just such a mood, the whole thing. And so to hear you say, it was a concert.
It really felt like we were in a concert and we were the group. And I mean, the reaction, that wasn't fake from the people that were watching it. When we did the first take and we got to do the whole thing up front right away.
Right.
We got to do the entire performance from start to finish. So everybody out there in the crowd was like, oh my God. And that song, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Yeah, your moves, like your energy is so, it's so infectious because you just seem like you're just having a great time.
Yeah. You know, talk about the moonwalk for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
My friend who I met, his name was Mr. Freeze. He was in Splash Dance. Remember the guy with the umbrella? He was a breakdancer.
Okay.
And remember the guy when the umbrella pops out and he starts moonwalking?
In Flash Dance?
In Flash Dance.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
That was him, Mr. Freeze. And so I got him to kind of teach me how to do it. At that particular time, too, there was a guy named Jeffrey Daniel who was one of the leads in Shalimar, that singing group Shalimar.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. He and I were really close friends. And as a matter of fact, I think at the time we were like roommates. Because I had a place. He was married to Stephanie Mills, the singer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
they got into a horrible fight. Oh. And then he left. One day I came back home, drove down my driveway. I had a back staircase that went upstairs because I lived in a duplex off of in the Fairfax area.
Okay.
And so I pulled down the long driveway. I got out the car. I go up the back staircase. And he's sitting there with all this luggage.
Oh, no.
He had moved out.
Oh, no.
He came in, and that's when he became our roommate, because I had like 2 bedrooms in that place. It was big. Yeah. And I'm like, of course, man. So anyway, he was like choreographing for Michael Jackson.
Okay.
All right. And so Michael's trying to get him, Streets of Fire to come out. I did the moonwalk in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So Michael saw it. Wanted to learn it.
No way.
Jeffrey,
you taught Michael Jackson the moonwalk? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying?
I was there. I don't want to say
that what I'm you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that.
That's what you're saying is if you hadn't done it, it wouldn't have happened.
You're saying the moonwalk.
Michael wanted to learn how to pop. Jeffrey was like the pop locking expert from Soul Train because that's how Shalimar started. And he was doing the moonwalk. Back then it was called the backslide. It wasn't called the moonwalk.
Okay.
It was the backslide. And Jeffrey taught me really how to perfect it. So that's when I performed in the movie. Michael saw it. He goes, oh, I love it. I want to do it. So, you guys, let me tell you
this
something.
Amazing.
Michael
amazing.
Jackson, Jeffrey taught him. I was there through a lot of those rehearsals. And that's how I ended up in Beat It.
I was just going to say.
That's how I ended up in Beat It. I had known the family for a long time.
I love that.
And so I used to go down to the rehearsals and stuff. Bob Giraldi, who directed it, but somehow knew who I was. And I was just an actor. I wasn't trying to be in a video.
Yeah.
I was just an actor.
You're the guy that taught Michael Jackson
so
about the moonwalk.
So we'd be hanging out in Michael's trailer on the set. So I'm down there with him and Jeffrey. And we're in his trailer. So Bob Giraldi comes in. And then he recognized me. Mm-hmm. And it was weird because I'm like, I wasn't some big star or anything like that, but he recognized me for some odd reason. And he goes, man, maybe we can get this guy to be in it. And then Michael says, yeah. And I'm like, no. I'm an actor, yeah. man. I wasn't trying to be in a music video. It's like, you know, kind of like an extra or whatever. And so.
Yeah, because that during that time, this was a different time.
Yeah. So they were like, man, you should think about it. You should think about it, Stoney. Think about it. Yeah. I said, okay, I'll think about it. So then I talked to Jeffrey. And Jeffrey was like, dude, this is going to be huge.
It's going to be iconic.
I mean, it's Michael Jackson's already like Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, man. All right. So Bob was like, cool. So he just started throwing me at it. Stoney, come over here. And he would throw me in this shot. If you watch the video, there's no like rhyme or reason to where I am in the video. I'm like all over the place. Like 1 second you'll see me here and then there'll be another shot and I'm over there. I'm walking down the street. It just makes no sense.
That's amazing.
But it was Bob Giraldi going, here, go in there. Yeah, it was weird.
Wow.
The next thing I know, that's like one of the things I probably get recognized most for is being in the Michael Jackson Beat It video.
So funny.
With no line.
I swear. But you had it.
And man, I'm so glad I did it. It was so fun.
That's wild, man. Yeah. But so when people recognize you, they go, oh, you're the guy from this or you're the guy from that. I mean, do you take it as a compliment or do you go, well, what do you know me for now? Does it matter to you?
I'm like the low key guy. Everybody wants to go, hey, yo, Stoney Jackson from Lydia. I'm like, no, don't do that. I like to stay low key, undercover. I'm not like, you know, want to be all out in the spotlight, although I do enjoy acting and I know you're on television and you're in a movie and people see you, but I don't know. It just never hit me like that. Like I need to be this star. I've never felt that way. So it's weird. That's kind of how I live. You know, I don't really care about being the big, huge star person.
Well, I mean, that speaks a lot to your character and to your upbringing perhaps. Because, having the humbleness, like even now when you're describing, well, you know, I don't know why he wanted me there. I don't know why. Like that's a level of humility and humbleness that is such appreciated. Sincerely. Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that you're on our show and talking about your career is huge for us because we're obviously big fans, you know,
and
everything. It's like every little thing. Talking about Trespass, you know, just jumping ahead to when you made Trespass again with Walter Hill and you're doing a movie with two of probably the biggest rap stars at the time,
Ice Cube
and Ice-T.
Do you know he wanted me for the Ice-T role?
Really?
Walter did, yeah. He brought me in. I've done like 4 or 5 projects with Walter.
Okay.
He and I have this really cool relationship. He always liked me. He always like put me to work. I did Wild Bill with him.
Yeah,
Awesome. Tales from the Crypt.
Yep.
I was supposed to do Undisputed, but again, because black actors didn't really have huge names. The studios never saw us as being able to put butts in seats as opposed to how it is now.
Yeah.
So when I was coming up, I had to audition pretty much for everything I ever got.
You're right.
Yeah.
Walter Hill never made me audition for anything. He would say, hey, meet me at Paramount, take you to lunch. I go, okay. He'd tell me I'd go there, studio,
we'd
go in the commissary on the nice side.
Because
you know there's two sides.
Fantastic.
I'd be sitting in there, man, and like all these big stars and big ass producers and stuff. And like, man. Yeah. So he would always do that for me. Call me up. Hey, Stoney, meet me at Paramount. Going to lunch. So I always knew after the first time that he had something for me. So whenever he would call me like that, I'm like, Walter, lunch.
Something.
Yep. And working with Walter, you always know it's going to be big time.
Yep.
So which movie were we talking about?
We're talking about Trespass. But
So what happened was he wanted me to do the Ice-T role.
Okay.
King James.
Yeah.
And then the studio said, we need bigger names.
Mm.
And at the time, the rappers had the bigger names.
Yes.
I mean, 92, I think we're talking.
And the rappers could put butts in seats because of the music. You know, music is so much bigger than movie stars, unless you become like the Tom Cruises or the Will Smiths or whatever.
Right.
Yes.
But music, everybody, and it's universal. So it's not like, you know, people in the United States only see your movies. Everybody across the globe hears a song.
Right.
Yep.
And loves it. So right. The studio said, we want some bigger names. So they ended up getting Ice Cube and Ice-T.
And Ice-T had just done New Jack City a couple years prior.
So, yeah. So he was like on a roll then. And so Walter called me back in. He goes, hey, Stoney, this time it wasn't lunch. He just said, come to my office.
Oh,
so
no.
He told me what happened. And I go, shoot. He goes, don't worry about it. Yeah. I'm still going to have you in the movie. So he wrote that part for me.
Really?
Wasn't originally written in the movie at all. It was kind of like that Leon Isaac Kennedy thing, except the difference was Walter actually put it on paper.
Mm.
So he wrote lines there. Yeah. So then at the same time, when we got on set, Walter pretty much, he said, look, I don't care what you guys do. Just kind of stick to the core of what I've written.
Mm.
But I don't care about the ad-libs. I don't care about this,
that's
that, and the other.
That's
and
great.
So I got a funny story. There was this little old white lady who was our script supervisor on Trespass. Remember, this movie's all guys. There's like no women.
Yeah.
There are
Walter
no women,
did something smart. He said, okay, all the stand-ins that we're going to hire are going to be all women. So there were women on the set. So you got like 11 main characters in this thing, and all the women are stand-ins. So it kind of like, it was a good idea because when you got too much testosterone in one room, it can get crazy.
Yeah.
So that kind of that kind of helped a lot.
Oh, that's funny.
So I remember this little old white lady. She was so sweet, and you would never expect this. I don't know. Can you use foul language?
Yeah,
on
totally. We can. Yes.
All right. So this is what I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
This little old white lady. She was real quiet. She was sitting over there, and man, she knew her business. She's working for Walter Hill, so you know she's got to be on point, right? Mm-hmm. So, we get into rehearsing a scene. Me, Ice, all the guys. But most of the dialogue was coming from me, Ice, and Cube. But Ice had most of the dialogue in this particular scene. So we're on set, we come in for rehearsal. So Ice is like, yo, yeah, fuck it. We gonna kill the motherfucker. We gonna do that, da, da, da. So then we go, okay, rehearsal's up again. We go do another rehearsal. So action on rehearsal. So Ice starts saying it, and he forgets his line. And he goes, what's the line? And the little white lady gets him. She goes, yo, motherfucker, I told you to. Everybody looked and fell out on the floor, man. It was funny as shit.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It was so funny.
That's awesome.
The little white lady, man. It was hilarious. It was one of those you had to be there moments.
Course, no. But
as opposed to me telling you about it, but man, you would have died.
What's funny about that, though, is like I could see Walter after that going, that was really good. Why we should put her in the movie now. Let's put it apart.
I remember Walter's face. He could not believe what he just heard from her.
I bet.
Verbatim.
That's hilarious.
Yo, motherfucker, I said kiss my... And she threw in the
inverse. With the attitude?
Everything.
Was she in with the attitude, too?
She was just
swagger?
Reading it. She was reading it.
Okay.
But she read it verbatim.
Wasn't like, I would like you to...
Oh, man.
Was the shoot challenging?
Yeah. We did our own stuff on there, man. We did our own stuff, you know, breaking down doors. I had to break down a door. I had no idea this door was going to be a real thick wooden door.
Oh shit!
And I had an axe.
Yeah,
yeah.
And when I hit it the first time, I hit it during the scene, the shot. I'm like, damn, it's a real door. I'm thinking like, you know, it's a studio movie.
Yeah.
So
splinter,
I'm going to be able to break through this door
it's
with
gonna
one
be scored or whatever.
Dude, I thought I was going to tear through that door with the first chop.
Yeah.
It took me about 20 chops trying
check
to get through
me
that
out.
Thing. Boom. I was like, wow, that's some real stuff. But funny. Yeah, all this stuff was cool. There was, remember that one scene where I was pretending to be the cop?
Yeah.
Yes.
And there was a slight incline. And me and this other actor, Byron Menz, were in this scene. And he was at the car. So I had to run and get in the car. So I was supposed to run up the hill and run behind the car and then open the door and get in. I just had this feeling. I said, boom, 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 boom. And I ran up, and I knew back then I was really athletic. I was in shape. I said, I could jump over this damn car.
No.
Yeah. And I had on a police belt and all this heavy equipment and stuff. And so I said, I could still jump over this car. So I said, Walter, I said, listen, I got an idea. He goes, what? I said, can I run instead of going around the car, which to me kind of takes too long if you're running from people that are shooting at you?
Yeah.
I said, can I run and dive over the car and get in? Yeah. And he looked at me, he goes, can you do that? And I said, yeah. He goes, nah, I don't think so, man. I don't want you to get hurt. I don't want anything to happen because all the insurance stuff. And all
of course.
He's like, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. And it was, the car was, what was that? God, I can't think of the name of the car, but it was a high-end car.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I go, I can do it, man. Just let me do it. He goes, okay. So rehearsal. I come flying up the hill. I dive over the top of the car. I dove so hard, I had to actually stick my hand back to grab the other side of the car like this so I didn't fly too far. Man.
Yeah, yeah.
So it slowed me down.
Yeah. Yep.
And then I opened the car and got in. And Walter was like, everybody on this set was like, and they couldn't believe I just did
that.
Yeah. I dove over the whole car.
Wow.
Yeah. So he left it in there. He goes, yeah, we're going to do it.
You're like, good, because so,
I had
walk,
to do
man.
It like 20 times, man. By that 20th time, like, I couldn't.
Right.
I could barely dive anymore. But yeah, he kept it in there.
I need a mineral.
That was
water.
An ad lib.
Yeah, that's great.
That's such a good point, though, because he's a guy who's doing tons and tons of takes.
Yeah.
Every time you're like, yeah, I can do it once. Oh, right. We got to coverage.
If there's something that's cool, Walter, he'll let you do it, man. He's so cool.
Yeah, well, I've seen many of his movies screened at the theater in Santa Monica, and he's been there and done a Q&A and whatnot. And it's just super, like, clearly has a passion for what he does. Mm. I love seeing the relationships he's created with the actors in his movies, the writers, the crew, the whole crew.
He uses his, like, his crew all the time.
Love that. And that's
Ry Cooter, his music guy. He uses everybody all the time. He stays loyal to all these people.
Projects right now, it's called Sangre Negra.
Sangre Negra, Black Blood. And that's what it means in Spanish.
Okay.
We've been having some back and forth on that title. It's a really a diverse cast, but the cast is set, or the story is set around a Hispanic family. Eric Estrada's in it. He plays the patriarch of this family. He has a couple of sons, and he has an illegitimate son with a woman he had an affair with who was a black woman. So that son is mixed. So that's where the black blood comes from.
Okay.
That particular son is like a gangster. He's into all kinds of bad crap. He's got his oldest son, who's an attorney, and his youngest son is a police detective. So the police detective's son, half-brother, they don't get along.
Okay.
But the older brother is actually his lawyer. Mm. So they get along. So you've got that dynamic of that family.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my character plays, I play a guy who is a somewhat of an acquaintance of the Black Blood brother.
Got it.
And he brings me in because he wants to try to take over this, like, mob situation where he's like the number one guy for this mobster.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to take over his business and he needs help doing it. So he knows that my character is this crazy street guy who just, you know, pop a cap and you just, you know, if you blink wrong.
Cimarron Squally, right?
Yeah, Cimarron.
Cimarron Squally.
Yeah.
Is that the name of your character?
Do some research.
Are you just saying words?
No, that's the name of his character.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Zach is the research king.
I try to be, man. You know, we're clearly big fans of your work. So I
appreciate
you know?
It. Yeah.
Having you on our show has been huge. This has been an honor.
Thank you for
tripping down memory lane with us.
Hey, man. Thank you guys. I don't normally like do, you know, this stuff. So like when you ask me, I'm like, okay. All right.
Well, I hope you had a
Was it worth it?
Oh man, it was great. You kidding me? Oh, you guys are awesome.
We don't want you to leave here and be like, I'm never doing those again.
Nah.
Well, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure.
Cool. Thank you.
I appreciate you having me.
Hi, Duke. Oh, listen, I just wanted to say goodbye and remind you that the good guys always win, even in the 80s.
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a
Is it 5-star rating?
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. We'd really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2LateFee Podcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.